Since I was a child, looking through the Haggadah every single year at the Seder, there are many questions one could ask. It's a night of questions. But one of the questions that stood out most in my mind, and I had very little clarity in, was an obscure phrase which comes just after we recite the 10 plagues, we recite the Makos, and we say as follows, Rabbi Yehuda hayanoisen bahem simonim. Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnaic sage, gave an acronym with which to represent the 10 plagues. Tetzach, Adash, Be'achav. This is an acronym for the 10 plagues in the Hebrew formula. Dam, Tzfardeya, Kinim, that's Tetzach, that is the blood, frogs and mice. Aroiv, Dever, Shchin, the wild animals, pestilence and boils, is Adash. And then Be'achav, Barad, Arbe, Choshech, Hail, Locusts, Darkness, and finally the base for Bechoros, the firstborn. And the question that came to mind is, what's the Chiddush? What's so unique about what Rabbi Yehuda is trying to teach us? After all, Rabbi Yehuda was a sage of the times of the Mishnah, who is obviously a tremendous scholar. Yet it seems almost like child's play to take the first letter of each of the 10 plagues by name and to arrange them into a sequence, supposedly to make it easier to remember. Well, what's so hard about remembering the 10 plagues? My young child of 3 years old is able to rattle off the 10 plagues by name, Dam, Tzfardeya, Kinim, etc., etc., without the need of an acronym to jog his memory. So obviously there's something deeper going on here in Rabbi Yehuda's teachings. Rabbi Yehuda is trying to give us a deeper message to enhance our understanding of what the 10 plagues are, and dare I say, to enhance our understanding of what the entire night of the Pesach Seder is about. This was not my own question. This is a question which has been asked as long as there have been commentators on the Haggadah. Going back to the early sages, we have Rashi. Rashi gives his interpretation that it's to clarify the order of the Makos, of the plagues. Because we find the 10 plagues are mentioned or referred to in Tehillim, in the book of Psalms, yet in a different order to the order they are in the Torah, the order that we're familiar with. There is a principle, Ein Muktam Umeuchar B'Torah, that there is no chronological order in the way things appear in the Torah. So I might have thought that the correct order of the occurrence of the plagues is the way they are recorded in Tehillim, not the way they are recorded in the book of Exodus, the book of Shemois. So comes along Rabbi Yehuda to say, no, the order they appear in the Torah is in fact the correct chronological order. Tetzach, Adash, Be'achav. The answer is somewhat lacking, because why does he have to teach it in this format, an acronym, in the way of a breakdown? Just say that the order in which they appear in the Torah is the correct order in which they occurred. Another answer. This is what was inscribed on the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Midrashic literature tells us about this wondrous staff of sapphire which Moshe Rabbeinu found and came into possession of. And it was with this, Mazeh Biyodecha, with that which is in your hand, he performed all of the plagues in Mitzrayim. And on this staff, says the Medrash, and it's brought in the Talmud Yerushalmi as well, were carved the letters of Rabbi Yehuda's acronym, Tetzach Adash Be'achav. And at that point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu was not quite aware what this formula was. Yet, after the plagues unfolded, Rabbi Yehuda tells us that this inscription, which was on Moshe's staff, was a representation of the 10 plagues in an acronym format. Okay. Could be. Another explanation. If we look in the order in which the plagues happen in the Torah, when it comes to the first plague, Dam, where the water turned into blood, Moshe warns Paroi. Moshe goes to the river where Paroi is bathing and says there is going to be a plague that the water will turn into blood. The second plague, the plague of frogs, Tzfardeya, Moshe comes into Paroi's palace and again warns him that if you do not send out Bnei Yisrael, there will be a plague of frogs. But comes the third plague of Kinim, of lice, there is no warning. It just happens. Then we go to the fourth plague. Wild beasts, Arev. Moshe again warns Paroi by the river. Dever, pestilence. Moshe warns Paroi in his palace. And Shchin, the sixth plague of boils, there is no warning whatsoever. And so too with the next three plagues as well. The plagues, number 7 and 8, come with a warning. plague number 9 is without a warning. So the commentaries tell us that this is the secret that Rabbi Yehuda is trying to teach us by breaking up the plagues into groups of 3. We'll get to the final plague of Makkos Bechoros in a moment. So you have the first set of 3 to teach us that 2 were with a warning and the 3rd was not. The next set of 3, the first 2 with a warning and the 3rd was not. And the final set of 3, 2 were with a warning and the other was not. And from this we actually have a source in Jewish law that after a person has been warned and punished twice for the same wrongdoing, so the 3rd time the Beis Din have the right to punish the person without warning them. You know, it's almost like a child. You give them 1 warning, you give them 2 warnings, and the 3rd time, no warning, immediate consequence. The difficulty with that kind of explanation, though, is if Pyro didn't listen to the 1st warning, he didn't listen to the 2nd warning, so then the 3rd plague comes without any warning, why would you warn him again with the 4th one? You think Mitamol has changed his mind, and now he's going to listen? We have the explanation of Avraham Barnel, which I'll run through very quickly because I don't want to dwell on it. And he says that the plagues were not just to punish the Mitzrim, but were an education process. Because Paro, in his attitude, when Moshe Rabbeinu first comes to him, is the biggest atheist that could exist. He says as follows, Mi Hashem asher eshma b'koiloi. Who is Hashem that I should listen to his voice? Lo yadaiti es Hashem. I do not know this Hashem. Vegam es b'nei Yisrael loy ashaleach, and I will not send out b'nei Yisrael. Says the Abar Benel that Paro denied 3 things. Firstly, he denied the existence of Hashem, the existence of a creator. Mi Hashem asher eshma b'koiloi. Who is this Hashem? Lo yadaiti es Hashem, I do not know Hashem, because even if there is Hashem, he is not involved in the ongoings of this world, there is no divine providence. And then finally, that even if there is a God, he has no power that is universal and absolute, and therefore cannot force me to do anything. This was Paro. So the plagues were part of an education process to retrain his manner of thinking. So we find that before the 1st plague, the plague of blood, the Torah tells us, Bezois teida ki ani Hashem. That with this plague, you will know that I am God. That there is a God, there is a creator. The 1st 3 plagues emphasize this point, that there is the existence of a creator. Before the 4th plague, it says, Laman teida ki ani Hashem bekerev haaretz. Not only is there a God, but this God is involved in the goings on in the lowly world. There is Hashgacha Pratis. There is divine providence. That was plagues 4, 5, and 6. And then just before plague 7, it says, Bavur teida, in order to know, ki ein kamoini b'chol haaretz. There is none like me in the entire world. That I'm absolutely powerful, and that my power is not limited to a select group of people or to a select geographic area. I am all powerful, and therefore I can impose my dictates to you, and you will obey. So Rabbi Yehuda is kind of alluding to these 3 things that Paro denied, and how the 3 groups of plagues served to educate him that he should come to the awareness of God, that God is all powerful, and that God is involved in the goings on in the world. These are the classic commentaries. But now let's go more to the esoteric. The Maharal of Prague, perhaps most famous for the legend of the Golem, has a long essay which goes through explaining the 10 plagues according to the breakdown which Rabbi Yehuda teaches us. So first, as you can see in the column running down the right side, we have the breakup of the plagues, the Tzach, blood, frogs, and lice, Adash, beasts, pestilence, and boils, and then Be'achav, hail, locust, darkness, and the death of the firstborn. And again, as we mentioned, that the 1st 2 plagues came with a warning, the 3rd without a warning, plagues 4, 5 with a warning, plague 6 without a warning, 7, 8 with a warning, 9 without a warning, and as you look, that the warnings followed a pattern that the 1st warning was issued outside when Paro was by the river, the 2nd warning was Paro in his palace, and then the 3rd plague came without warning. And we asked the question, we said, well, why was it necessary to go back to this order of warnings?
So to understand this a little bit better, the Maharal tells us that all existence can be divided up into three spheres. Because after all, the 10 plagues were there to purge Mitzrayim. Egypt represented negativity. Egypt represented that which denies God's existence or which conceals God's existence. And the process of liberation, redemption from Mitzrayim is the process of breaking down that concealment to reveal the awareness of godliness within the world. And when you want to purge something, you have to purge it, you have to cleanse it in all of its levels, so that no trace of negativity is left at all. So the Maharal tells us that the entire existence can be divided up into three spheres, or three stratas, three levels. There are what is known as the Tachtoin, the lowest sphere, and that is the earth. The earth that we walk on, the water, that is the Tachtoin, that's the bedrock, that's the foundation of existence. Let's jump to the top. We have the Elyon. The Elyon, the upper spheres, that is, or incorporates, the heavens, the sky, the celestial bodies, the orbits. And then you have the Chalal Ha'olam. Chalal literally means a void, but it means the space which is above the surface of the earth, but is not up in the heavens, but is rather rooted on the ground. And that's where we are. We're not part of the ground, we're not part of the water, but we roam, or we travel and traverse across the surface of the land, as do the animals and the plants which grow. So, with this in mind, we have to see how the plagues strike at each of these three levels of Egyptian existence, and to understand the effect that they have. The first three plagues, Dam, Tsefardeya, Kinim, blood, frogs, and lice, all struck bodies which are associated with the Tachton, with the earth. Blood, it was the river, the Nile, which turned into blood. Tsefardeya, the frogs, emerged from the river, from the Nile. And Kinim, the lice, was created when Aaron struck the sand, the earth of Mitzrayim, and it was transformed into lice. So these three plagues all took place in the Tachton, in the lowest sphere of existence, the earth and the water bodies. The next three plagues, Arev, Dever, Shchin. These three plagues all struck on that which is on the surface or above the earth. Arev, wild animals, which roam across the earth. Dever, pestilence, struck the cattle, which again lives and dwells on top of the earth, but still walking on the ground. And then finally, Shchin, the boils, which struck both man and beast, man and animals, again, all connected to the Chalal Ha'olam, this plateau above the earth's surface. Let's now go to the final plagues. Barad, hail from the heavens, was a strike against the Elyon, the upper echelon of Egyptian existence, the celestial spheres. Arbe, locusts, as opposed to wild animals, which are land animals, the Arbe is an airborne animal. And those following the news, I guess, are familiar that there's been an Arbe plague in Egypt again. And just as Bnei Yisrael were spared back then, we should be spared from such things as well. So you have Arbe again being connected to the air, connected to the heavens. Choshech, darkness. Darkness is a makkah, is a plague which strikes the celestial luminaries, that the sun, the moon, and the stars are not able to function, are not able to give light. And then again, we will leave the final plague, makkas b'choros, death of the firstborn, to explain at a later point in time. So we see that the breakup of Rabbi Yehud is starting to tell us something quite interesting, that we can break up the plagues. And they happen very systematically, that all of the first three plagues are all connected to the earth. The next three plagues are all connected to that which is on the surface of the earth. And then the next three plagues are all connected to heavenly or sky-related bodies. But why is it necessary to have three plagues in each of these groups? What's the necessity for three? Surely one plague would have been enough. Poof, one plague and you're able to strike out the entire Tachtoin of Mitzrayim, or the Elyon. So here we come to one of the classic ideas in mystical thought, particularly in the teachings of the Maharal, is that the number three is a number which represents totality. How is that? Let's take the color white, for example. When white is on its own, and if that was all that existed, yes, it's a pure color. But let's contrast this to the other end of the spectrum. We have black. The number two represents opposites, represents extremities, black and white, hot and cold, day and night. Where does number three come in? Number three is that element, says the Maharal, which fuses together and connects the two opposites. That's the idea of a triangle. If you have a line which goes, a line can go for infinity, from one extreme all the way to the other. But the minute you introduce a new third point, the third point of a triangle, that brings unity to those two extremes, that they are now fused together. For this reason, we have three Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Because just like the tripod stands firmly and strongly on three legs, Bnei Yisrael stands firmly on the three fathers of our people. You have hot and cold and warm in the middle. Day, night, and twilight in between. The number three represents and ties together. It covers the entire spectrum. Black and white and everything in between is unified by this number three, by the third element. Now if you think about it, whereas white and black are two new forces that are different, the third element over here is not a new force, but rather the combination of the two existing forces. Hot and cold are two different extremes. Warm is the combination of the two. Gray being the combination of both white and black together. And we're going to explain this perhaps as we go through more in the terms of Kabbalah itself. So that's the number three. And with this, the Maharal explains why it was necessary for there to be three plagues in each of the three stratas of Egyptian infrastructure. So let's now go back. You have to stay with me. Again, we have to imagine and think through the lens of the Maharal, who lived a few hundred years ago. And he shows how the three plagues in each of these levels of Mitzrayim represent two opposite energies, and the third energy, which is the combination of the two. So let's start with the tachtoin. You have dam, blood. What is the property of blood? Blood is connected to fire. It's something which rages. It's something which boils. It's something with passion. Fire is hot and dry. Tzfardea, frogs. Frogs are cold and moist. And then you have kinim, lice. Says the Maharal, what type of environmental conditions, weather conditions, breed lice or breed any form of bacteria? That is where you have the combination of heat and moisture together. When you have humidity, which is the moisture of the frogs, combined with the heat of the blood, we have kinim. So these three plagues represent two extremes, and then the third and final unifying factor, which completes a total purification of the entire chalol, the earth-related aspects of Mitzrayim. Now let's move to the chalol ha'olam. Arev, wild animals. Says the Maharal, and this is brought in the Gemara, it's brought in halacha of the Rambam, about when one is able to pray on Shabbos for calamities and for salvation, that an attack of wild animals is considered to be a freak phenomenon. It's not considered to be a natural occurrence that you have en masse an attack of wild animals in broad daylight in a populous area. So this represents the completely unnatural. That's the Arav. Dever, pestilence on the other hand, illness, is something which is quite run-of-the-mill, quite standard, a very natural occurrence. So again, two opposites. The unnatural and the natural. And then you have Shechin, the boils. Now the boils which struck the Egyptians in Mitzrayim, boils again, is yes, it's a natural occurrence. It's a medical type of condition, perhaps not as common as we would think pestilence are, but the boils which struck Mitzrayim, the commentaries tell us, were quite unique in their nature, that they wouldn't heal, and that they would blister, and they would be moist, etc. So this represents the fusion of both a seemingly natural occurrence, but with properties of the unnatural or supernatural. So again, we have two opposite energies, the Orev and the Dever, and then the Shechin, which is the totality or the fusion, the completion of that triangle which purges the middle sphere of Mitzrayim, that which is above the earth. Now let's go up to the Elyon, to the heavens. Barad, hail. Hail falls from the sky. Hail moves milamayla lamata, from above to below. It travels downwards. Arbe, locusts. Locusts travel from below to above. The birds fly up from the ground to the heavens. So whereas Barad represents coming from above to below, the birds represent a movement from below to above. And then we have the Makkah of Choshech, of darkness. Darkness was a plague which struck that the heavenly luminaries, the sun, the moon, and the stars, should not function and should not provide light to the earth. The sun and the moon and the stars travel on galgalim. They travel on orbits. An orbit has a movement which is going upwards, but also going downwards. So again, we see how in the Elyon, in the upper sphere of Egyptian existence, we have two extremes, from below to above, the locusts, from above to below, the hail, and then the choshech, which combines and creates that triangle, which represents an absolute eradication of negativity in the Elyon of Mitzrayim. Well, this is the representation that we now have. We have three plagues occurring in each of the three subsectors of Egyptian existence, the earth, above the earth, and the heavens. But what happened to our final tenth plague, Makas Bechoires, the death of the firstborn? In mystical thought, the firstborn, the Rashis, the first, has a tremendous power. Because in the first is the very essence of whatever it is a first of. The firstborn child receives the essential vitality of the father, and that's why younger siblings have to honor their older siblings. So too, I have a little bit of a chuckle from all the younger siblings over there. I have a twin sister 2 minutes older, and I've never lived it down. And it applies to honoring older sisters as well. So, where does Makas Bechoires come in? If you look at the progression of the plagues, we've gone from the lowest levels all the way up to the highest levels. And you would think at this point in time, Egypt has been completely purified. But the number 9 is not the same as number 10. Number 10 represents absolute completion, absolute totality, because it includes the essence as well. If you could imagine these 9 aspects, these are all the more external dimensions or the external manifestations of the negativity of Mitzrayim. And the 10th and final plague, which strikes the Bechor, strikes at the very essence of the negativity of Egyptian culture, of the Klippa of Paro, the Klippa of Mitzrayim. And that is Makas Bechoires. Makas Bechoires, once everything has been prepared, comes the final plague, that death knell, which under that Paro crumbles, sends out Bnei Yisrael. And that 10th and final plague incorporates and brings a sense of completion to all of the other 9 plagues which preceded it. And that's why after the first 9 plagues, Paro did not yet exceed that Bnei Yisrael should leave. And only after Makas Bechoires does he do so. Okay, now let's look in this in terms of the terminology of Kabbalah, the terminology of Chassidus, which some of us might be more familiar with us, and perhaps others not as much as well. We speak about 10 plagues. The number 10 in Kabbalistic literature is connected to the 10 sephiros. The 10 sephiros are the divine emanations with which God's creative vitality comes down into this world to create the world and to interact with the world. These are expressions of godly light which have an impact on the world and its goings on. These ten spheres exist in a world known as Atzilus, a spiritual godly reality, and from there they filter down to create our worldly reality. And they mirror the systems within the human consciousness. There are three intellectual spheres, three intellectual qualities, and then seven emotional ones. So these three intellectual qualities are known as Chachma, Bina, and Da'as. Has anyone heard of those terms before? Chachma, Bina, and Da'as, the acronym of Chabad. These represent the three different processes of the intellect. Chachma being perception, where we have a perception or an awareness of an idea. Bina being the breakdown and understanding of that idea. And Da'as being the application of that concept. Then we have Chesed, Gevura, and Tiferes. The three primary emotional sefiros. Chesed, kindness, Gevura, distance or severity, and Tiferes literally means beauty, because this is the synthesizing of both Chesed and Gevura together. And then we have the three lesser sefiros, Netzach, Hoid, and Yesoid. Netzach being ambition, the drive to advance. Hoid being submission, to withdraw or to surrender or to submit. And then Yesoid is connected to the idea of bonding and connection to others as well. So if we look at the breakdown of these sefirot, we have three lower sefirot. These could be referred to as the tachtoid. We'll come to Keser in a moment. The Kabbalists tell us that the sefirot mirror the human body. Netzach and Hoid are referred to as the two thighs, the two legs of the body of supernal man. Yesoid being connected to the Ois Bris Kodesh, the reproductive organ, the idea of connection. All of these are the lower parts of our body. And they are connected to the lower aspect that we spoke about, the Tachtoin. They are the Tachtoin within ourselves and the Tachtoin within the godly reality. Then we have the three primary emotions, Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferes. Chesed is called or referred to as the right hand, Gevurah is connected to the left hand, and Tiferes the chest or the heart, where the right and left come together. This is the Chalal or the Toich, the middle of a person, or the middle level of the godly reality of the world of Atzilus. And then finally we have the three intellectual qualities, Chachma, Bina, and Das. They exist in the head, they exist in the mind, in the brain, which is the Elyon, which is the highest part of a person. And therefore these represent very lofty, godly emanations. Then we have Keser. If you remember, we said in the previous slide that Makas Bechoris was the absolute essence of Egypt, which came after and incorporates all of the other aspects of Mitzrayim. And so too, that is what Keser is. Keser is not part of the body. Keser means a crown. A crown is worn above the head. It is a level which is even higher than the intellectual qualities. It is above the Elyon, the upper aspect of our reality. And it represents the essence of godliness. And within our souls, it represents the essence, not the cognitive qualities of our intellect and our emotions, but rather the essence of who we are, the essence of the neshama of the soul, as opposed to the expressions, the manifestation, the koichas of the soul. Okay. The number 10 comes up many times. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which describes various tens. And here I have three of them, which kind of mirror the history of the Jewish people. Basara ma'amores nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 utterances. The way we describe God creating the world is with the metaphor of speech. God said, let there be light, let there be a firmament, let the earth give forth vegetation, etc. We use the term of speech, and with 10 statements where it says in the Torah, Vayomer, and he said, although, as you'll note, there are only 9 instances where it says Vayomer in the passage of creation. And the Gemara tells that Bereshis Nami Maimer Hu. The word Bereshis itself, the very first word in the Torah, is counted as one of the 10 utterances of creation. And like Makas Bechoris, this is the overall and all-encompassing utterance of creation. That is the number 10. Then we have the 10 plagues, which we've spoken about. And then we have the Of course, the big 10, for those who sing the songs at the end of the Haggadah, Asara Miyodea, who knows what is 10? That the 10 are the Dibraya, are the 10 commandments, the Aseres HaDibras. How are these three related? So the Maharal, in his work, and we're not going to go through it, I'll bring it up on a slide and you can glance through it, shows us how the 10 plagues parallel or are connected to the 10 utterances of creation. The Zohar in Parshas Bahaloscha shows the parallel between the 10 commandments and the 10 utterances of creation, how they mirror each other. And therefore, if A plus, A and B work out the computations, there must be a correlation between, an inference between all three, that the three must be related as well. So comes along the Sfas Emes, one of the early Hasidic masters, and he says, what is the connection? The connection is very simple. God created the world, as we've just explained, with 10 sephiros. God created the world with godly energy, with a light of elokus, of godliness. But in the process of creation, through speech, that was hidden and contracted. The godliness is not observable and noticeable in our world. We see a facade, we see a world which seems to function on its own. Like Paro said, right? Mi Hashem Asher Shema B'Koloi. Who is this Hashem? I don't see Hashem. I see a physical world. So the process of creation channeled this godly light of the 10 sephiros into a shell of a physical reality through these 10 statements. And when that process takes place, you could have Paro, and Paro does not only mean Paro Melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, there is a Paro inside of us as well. Paro being that part of existence which denies the presence of the Creator, could come along and say, Mi Hashem. All that exists is a finite physical reality with no spiritual quality to it at all. To break that, we need 10 plagues. The 10 plagues is like the cracking of a peel, the cracking of a shell which conceals the nut which is hidden inside of it. And once that peel, that shell of physical reality which hides and obscures godliness is broken, what becomes revealed is the godly nature of existence, and that is the Torah, that is the Aseres HaDibros, that is the 10 commandments. This is what the Sfas Emes says. In every generation, we have to see ourselves as personally going out of Egypt. Then when we come to the Seder night, we're not just celebrating something which happened thousands of years ago to a group of people who left a country under the rule of a king, of a dictator. We're talking to ourselves. The Haggadah is the story of the journey which we are meant to be experiencing, not only at the Seder night, but leman tizker es yom tzeischa me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha. Every single day, we are going through the journey, the process of leaving Mitzrayim, of leaving Egypt. Now, obviously, we're not subservient physically to anyone. We're not building pyramids. We're not schlepping bricks. We're not working with mortar. We're talking about the spiritual exile and the spiritual process of redemption. So how is that? We have a godly soul. Each one of us has a neshama. And the neshama has these 10 koichos which mirror and parallel the 10 divine sephiros, the 10 godly emanations. And they exist within our soul. These are the tools with which the soul is able to interact and express itself in the world. But like the Jewish people who went down and were swallowed up into Mitzrayim, like the 10 sephiros which were channeled downwards and were swallowed up in the concealment of the 10 utterances of creation, the neshama, the soul, goes downwards from its spiritual bliss up above, and it comes down into a physical body, and it comes down into a physical environment where godliness is not manifest, and it's enclosed within an animalistic soul. And this animalistic soul, the Alter Rebbe tells us in Tanya, also has 10 powers. But whereas the 10 powers of the godly soul are godly in their nature, and therefore desire and crave connection to spirituality, and do not have any desire for the material, the animalistic soul's qualities are referred to as the 10 crowns of impurity. The 10 crowns of impurity because they crave physicality. They desire material. They do not have an appreciation for the spiritual. So the neshama, the soul, comes down into this environment, a physical environment, where godliness is not sensed. It's placed into an animalistic soul, which desires material and selfish indulgence. And here the neshama has to utilize its 10 qualities to do its function in the world, and that is to serve, to connect to its creator. How is that possible? This is the journey of the personal Yetzias Mitzrayim. The personal Yetzias Mitzrayim is about liberating the godly soul inside of ourselves, which may not be expressed or sensed on the day-to-day basis, but the Seder night, and every time we recall the Exodus, is to serve as the impetus to want to change that status quo. To reflect, how can I break through, again, a process of 10 plagues, and whatever that represents on a person's individual lifestyle, how I can break those paroys in my life which deny the existence of a creator. Now, chas v'shalom, God forbid, no one here denies the creator. Every Jew is ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. We are all believers in the creator. And we all believe in Hashem's hashgacha pratis, His divine ongoings and workings within the world. But, perhaps in the day-to-day life, the rat race of life, in the business world, sometimes we lose sight of the true nature of who we are, the neshama, and the true purpose for that which we were created. Sometimes we find ourselves like the Jewish slave who is trapped in the mindset of paro. And comes along the plagues through the commentary of the Maharal that says that it's a process which has to start from bottom to top. That we start from the lower parts of our lives, the easier steps, and one by one we put together a program by which we destroy any sense of selfishness, any negative emotions that we may have, negative character traits, and thereby we are able to reveal and unleash our godly potential that's inside of ourselves. So step by step, Dam, Tzfardeya, Kinim, Arav, Dever, Shchin, working through the lower parts of our existence all the way up to the higher parts of our existence. So when we pour the wine out and we say the acronym that Rabbi Yehuda teaches us, the Tzach Adash Ba'achav. So we asked in the beginning, well, what's Rabbi Yehuda really Maka Mashmalan? What is he trying to tell us over here? There's tremendous wisdom in these words, in this acronym of Rabbi Yehuda, which goes to the very nature of what the world or how the world is made up. It speaks to the very nature of the composition of our soul, and these are the tools for us truly experiencing personal redemption. And when we go through the process of personal redemption, this brings about the collective redemption. So that when we come to the Seder already this year, when we say Lashana Haba Birushalayim next year in Jerusalem, so the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe explained that does not mean we have to wait for Mashiach to come next year. It means Mashiach will come right now, and automatically next year we will be in Yerushalayim. And then we will have the Seder in its full sense, together not only with the Matzah and the Maror, which I'm sure is now going to be discussed in the Halachas at length in its practical capabilities, but maybe we'll have to invite Rabbi Gudnick to tell us the Halachas of how we're going to be eating the Korban Pesach this year in Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh.